From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, a key piece of the governor's 2013 agenda appears to be in jeopardy. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on early voting in New York, and we'll take you to the Empire State Pride Agenda's annual lobby day in Albany. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. A key component of Governor Cuomo's 2013 agenda appears in jeopardy as the governor concedes he does not currently have enough votes in the state Senate to bring an abortion rights bill he has championed to the floor. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
State Senate Republican leader Dean Skelo says a bill to put into state law the abortion rights protections in the federal Roe v. Wade decision won't be voted on in the state Senate.
We're not going to put it on the floor. In my opinion, the opinion of my conference, that bill was not moving.
New York's abortion laws precede the landmark 1973 Supreme Court decision, and supporters say the state's laws need to be updated in case Roe is ever overturned. But Senator Skelo, in an interview with public radio and television, says that's not going to happen.
Abortion, whether you're pro-life, pro-choice, is not going to go away in New York State. People are not being criminally charged.
Governor Cuomo admits he has a difference of opinion with Senator Skelos.
He's been opposed to the choice vote for many, 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 many years. I understand that.
Skelos has for weeks now labeled the abortion rights provision extreme, saying it would make late-term abortions more prevalent.
Literally up to the date of that child would be born. It would take away all criminal penalties for those who would kill a child when kill the mother, kill the child, injure the child before it was born.
Backers deny that, but there is currently no actual bill that's been written to spell out exactly what the governor wants. Cuomo concedes he does not currently have the right formula for legislation that would garner enough votes in the Senate.
We do not yet have language for a bill where we have identified enough votes with certainty that it would pass.
There are around 30 Democrats in the state Senate who would likely vote for a version of the Reproductive Health Act, but 32 votes are needed to pass legislation. Senator Jeff Klein is the leader of the four-member Independent Democratic Conference. It controls the Senate along with the GOP. He says he's a strong supporter of strengthening the state's abortion rights laws, but he also admits the votes currently are not there.
I think more than anything, we need a calculator because we need the votes to be able to pass women's reproductive health. And the last I checked, we don't have 32 Democrats to pass it. So that means we need to figure out a way to have a bipartisan agreement. And so far, that doesn't seem to be happening. But I'm still optimistic.
Governor Cuomo is meeting with a coalition of women's groups, including NARAL Pro-Choice New York and the National Organization of Women, to try to craft bill language. The goal of the governor and the women's groups is to come up with legislation that is palatable to a handful of moderate Senate Republicans. They could then join with the Democrats to vote yes, says NARAL's Andrea Miller.
There are many Republican senators who I believe have a belief in a woman's right to choose as their core conscience, and who have districts where this is a strong majority, and being able to provide something that they can very explicitly say, I get what this does, it's very clear, it's very simple, it's about Roe versus Wade and protecting a woman's right to choose and making our laws clear and up to date. Done.
Miller concedes that without an actual bill, it's easy for opponents like Senator Skelos to present what she says is a mischaracterization of the proposal. And she says the senator has put himself between a rock and a hard place.
The leader has drawn a line in the sand on this issue. He drew one incredibly early. He took a very extreme position, very fast out of the box. And when you start walking that back, it's hard. And I think that perhaps his hope is that we won't be able to come up with something. I think he's wrong.
The governor says ultimately he wants the issue of women's reproductive rights to be voted on.
People have a right to know where the elected officials stand on those important issues.
The end of the legislative session is scheduled for June 20th. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, this week in the Assembly, a proposal passing on early voting in New York State. And, you know, some other places have passed this, but of course it has to get through the state Senate, which doesn't look so good. What do you make of that?
Well, let me put it this way. We know that traditionally, both in the Congress and in the state legislature, that the Democrats are always trying to expand the ability to vote. In other words, maybe more absentee ballots, it may be motor voter, it may be any of those things. But in the end, they know that the more people that vote, the more the Democrats get helped because their turnout rate is lower than Republicans, even though there are more of them than Republicans. Then the Republicans, on the other hand, always oppose. Now, in New York State, we have a very interesting situation. We have Dean Skelos, the head of the Republicans. You will remember that when Skelos maintained his majority by making a coalition with a bunch of Democrats who were dissatisfied with the Democratic leadership, four or five of them, and there was a deal, a hard-pressed deal, that every 2 weeks one of them would be the leader. Well, it hasn't exactly worked out that way. Skelos is really the leader. And Skelos says on a number of these things, I'm not going to do it. And so we have the old way of doing it, which is that the Republicans say no. The key issue in this is whether the governor of the state of New York, Andrew Cuomo, wants to really have this expanded, whether early voting or any of the other plans are going to happen. Well, if he really wants it, he can have it. How do we know this? Because there are more Democrats in the state Senate than Republicans, but you have to follow the bouncing ball. That means that the four or five people under Jeff Klein, combined with the existing Democrats, could insist on it, could vote on it, the governor could insist on it, or they could just tumble the entire arrangement that they have and make the Democrats in charge again if Jeff Klein and his rogue group rejoin. So if Andrew Cuomo really, really wants expanded voting, if he really wants to do this, he'll get it because he has the ammunition to do it. The only question, of course, as usual, is he just posturing or does he really want it?
Word came out this week, Alan, that the governor now has taken control over his own book. HarperCollins has made an agreement with him, and he is expected to talk frankly about his accomplishments so far in office, like gay marriage and gun control, as well as his storied family.
It's a very interesting story.
Yes.
In fact, it may be the most interesting of all to the insiders here in Albany. Let me tell you how it works. The New York Post has a columnist. I am sworn to myself not to mention his name. I don't mention his name. I don't get along with him, and therefore this has become a little personal over the years. So what happens is this guy turns the tables at the very beginning, becomes Andrew's best friend, and he just acts as a puppy dog for Cuomo. Cuomo knows that this guy's history has always been that he turns on people, that he gets vicious with governors, and that that's how he made his reputation. Well, sure enough, up comes the gun bill, the, quote, SAFE Act. And that's when he turns, and he turns, this columnist for the POST, and he turns hard. And he starts writing vitriolic, terrible stuff about his best friend, the governor. The governor had been paying him off, basically, by showing up on his, rather small radio show in a small station in, in Albany AM station. And he stopped that. So now there's real war going on between the two of them. They had announced, the governor's office, that they were going to go along with this fellow and his book. And it was going to be an authorized biography. They were going to help him. Well, once the fellow turned, there was hell to pay, and I'm sure the governor's people started to worry about what this book was going to look like. The reporters, he's not a reporter, really. He's a sort of mean-spirited columnist. So his publisher was HarperCollins. Now, who is HarperCollins owned by? It's owned by Murdoch, the same guy who owns the Post, who employs the guy. So therefore, apparently, the governor's people, through a very famous agent, go to HarperCollins and say, tell you what, we'll write a biography. It'll be a tell-all biography. We'll talk about social life, hinting, I think, at his relationship with Sandra Lee, the food lady, and everybody else, and I'll tell everything. And so what I'm going to do is do that. And then all of a sudden, they cool on the columnist book, which had been promised to them. Well, as the old saying goes, just saying, just asking, is it possible there was a quid pro quo? We'll give you the book if the other guy is excluded. And so all the insiders are gabbing about it in Albany. And, of course, the so-called columnist, who is very fond of quoting sources, I have sources and they're good ones and nobody knows who they are, this guy is now livid, I am sure, and is taking out after the governor. But he doesn't have the governor on his little radio show anymore, and so nobody cares.
So, Alan, is this a common thing when journalists cover governors where agreements get made and trades?
David, let me tell you something. I teach a class, the Legislative Gazette class, and my teaching is a little at odds with those of the traditional journalists who say, oh, no, this is bad. You can't give away your integrity. You can't do this. There's trading all the time. In order to get access, because as we all know, politics is the authoritative allocation of scarce resources or how you cut the pie, and getting access to a governor, you trade for that. So you're bad, you don't get access. You're good, you get access perhaps.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. Just a day after veteran NBA player Jason Collins made national headlines by becoming the first active male athlete in the four major sports to come out as gay, state lawmakers, gay rights advocates, and labor and law enforcement officials participated in the Empire State Pride Agenda's annual lobby day in Albany. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas was there and filed this report.
Although New Yorkers are becoming more accepting following the legalization of same-sex marriage in 2011, activists and advocates want to ensure that gay rights and gay pride stay in the media spotlight. Reginald T. Brown is with the LGBT faith leaders of African descent of New York City.
Being able to get married is nice, but if you're not able to get a job because you're transgendered, or if you're fired from a job because you're transgendered, or for other things because you're transgendered, then I think that's just as important, if not more so, than getting married. Getting married is nice, but that's not number one on my radar. There are too many other things that need to be done in addition to that.
Brown calls Jason Collins coming out a game changer.
A paradigm has been shaken. He's not only coming out as a gay man, he's coming out as a black gay man. As a black gay man, this is going to shake up a lot of stereotypes that people think. And also that he's been in professional sports for a while. So it's not like he's a newcomer. He's been around, so it's like, now, how are you going to react to him? He's the same person he was before he said that. So people are going to have to, I think, really look at themselves and say, wow, okay, has he changed? No, he hasn't. I know he hasn't, but people's minds will change, and I think it'll be very good.
Ashley Andrews of Buffalo's Gay Straight Alliance says everyone deserves human rights.
If people see other people being confident that they're strong enough to come out and, you know, express who they are, other people are going to have that confidence, and they're going to express who they are, and then it just influences everyone.
Alana Sophia O'Hare is a trans woman from Troy who attributes the internet to sealing her fate to come out. O'Hare sees Jason Collins' effort to become visible as pushing society forward.
People are starting to see that there's more people like them out there, and people who don't understand about sexuality issues, gender issues, will start to see the interconnectedness that we all have.
David Whitbeck and his wife have many friends in the gay community. The retiree applauds Collins' courage.
That he came out and had the guts to do it, I think that's terrific.
Watertown High student Brittany Ruiz wants her gay and transgendered friends to be able to enjoy the teen years as much as anyone else. She called Collins' revelation a cultural milestone.
I feel like that's going to change the world and the perspective of things now. Like, people will see that, you know, it's okay to be different. And just because you're an athlete doesn't mean you have to follow the certain stereotype.
Kira Elliott believes 2013 is the year that changes everything for those in the gay community, and that those changes will trickle into other groups and classes.
It doesn't matter what you identify yourself as or what your title is. You can do the same stuff as other people do.
In a statement of support for Jason Collins, Boston Celtics coach Doc Rivers expressed happiness and pride and said in the end, quote, it will be society who has to learn tolerance. If the Albany gathering is any indication, society may well be on its way toward that goal.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
A New York State Assemblyman from the Hudson Valley has an idea about how to restore funding for not-for-profit programs for people with developmental disabilities. He admits there is some resistance to his plan, but insists opponents don't see the bigger picture. We get more from the Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn.
Several lawmakers have been searching for ways to restore $90 million in funding to the nonprofits supported by the State Office of People with Developmental Disabilities, funding that was cut in the recently passed 2013-2014 state budget. Republican Assemblyman Kieran Michael Lawler, who represents portions of Dutchess County, introduced a bill Tuesday to take the $90 million from the $420 million allotted in the budget for New York film production tax credits.
If there's that much money in the budget for Hollywood, we should be able to find some for the developmentally disabled, because it is truly a case of the powerless, the voiceless getting a $90 million cut, and the very elite, the very connected, getting a pretty sizable tax credit.
He points out that the $420 million in state tax credits includes one dubbed the Jimmy Fallon tax credit, referring to tax credits headed for producing The Tonight Show, which will move to New York from California when Fallon takes over from Jay Leno. And there's an older New York-based show, Lawler mentions.
In some cases, they give a tax credit to television shows that have been in New York for decades. Saturday Night Live, I think, started in New York in 1976. They get a tax credit. Saturday Night Live isn't going anywhere. It's never going to be live from Vancouver. It's Saturday night. So why are we giving them a tax credit to stay in New York? I mean, they're a New York show. They're not going to go anywhere.
Here's Democratic Assemblyman from Westchester County, Thomas Abinanti.
I support reinstating the $90 million in the budget of the Office of People with Developmental Disabilities. I have not made a determination as to where the money should come from. I credit my assembly colleague with an imaginative proposal as to where it should come from. But I don't think that we should make that determination at this point.
He says there should be an analysis of whether the film production tax credit is money well spent before pulling funds from the $420 million.
There are projects throughout the state of New York that have benefited because of this tax credit. And New York is competing with other states that have similar tax credits. And we don't want to lose the business solely on the basis of the taxes. So I think we'd have to do a careful analysis, but I definitely believe that we should restore the $90 million from wherever the money's come from.
Lawler says so far he has support from one upstate Democrat and sees resistance from downstate Democratic lawmakers whose districts are home to film and television productions.
My strategy is basically to show that this is a no-brainer. You know, reduce by 20% the amount going to Hollywood and restore the developmentally disabled. I think the math is very, you know, the actual math and the political math is very simple there. We just need to keep at it to convince the powers that be in both houses to realize that.
So far, he says there is no parallel movement in the Senate.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The Adirondacks came to life at the state capitol this week. A wide sector of interest were showcased in the well of the Capitol building during Adirondack Day in Albany. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley.
Organized in part by the Adirondack Partnership, exhibits showcase six sectors, including tourism and recreation, education, stewardship and invasives, the Adirondack Harvest Program, and the Regional Economic Development Councils. Partnership Chairman Bill Farber wanted to make it easy for legislators to see how dynamic the region is.
It can be really challenging to explain some of the nuanced differences between the Adirondack Park and Central Park or Yellowstone Park if you don't start with that basic understanding that this is half public and half private, that 130,000 year-round residents live here, that there are some pretty amazing businesses in the park, and that people are trying to establish more businesses and more successful job opportunities in the park.
New York State GOP Senator Betty Little says a wide variety of interests were presented, from colleges to environmental groups and owls from the Wild Center.
When I have bills in the Senate, and now I have other senators that understand the extent of the park, it's a park where people live, where communities are, where businesses are. It's a real partnership between those who live in the park and those who visit the park, and that we have to have a balance between the environment and the economics of the park.
Adirondack Park Local Government Review Board Executive Director Fred Monroe notes that the state has enormous impact on what happens in the park.
Between the Adirondack Park Agency and DEC, managing the forest reserves, the policy that's made here in Albany has dramatic impacts on people's lives in the Adirondacks. And I think there's a sense that many of the downstate legislators don't have a great understanding of the Adirondacks and that there's 130,000 people that live there and that there's businesses there that aren't all associated with tourism and with the forest reserve. So it was an opportunity to highlight that.
Plattsburgh North Country Chamber of Commerce President and CEO Gary Douglas says the day was set up to encourage legislators to learn more about the Adirondacks.
It is a living region with communities and businesses and a lot of things that are very good for the state of New York that we need to encourage and invest in, and that's starting to happen.
Adirondack North Country Association Executive Director Kate Fish says it was important to illustrate not only the region's natural resources, but the economic vibrancy of the region.
There's been sort of a long-held view that New York is primarily an urban state, and because of the success of the North Country Regional Economic Development Council and the attention that the governor is paying to the Adirondacks, there's a focus being turned north a little bit, like, whoa, what's going on up here? I think that's an opportunity that is really important for the Adirondacks and the North Country to capture and capitalize on.
The day-long exhibits at the Capitol were followed by an evening Taste of the Adirondacks reception featuring agricultural products from the region.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That number again, 1-800-323-9262. As for program number 1318. Or just listen or podcast on the web at WAMC.org. And join us again next week at the same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.